headlines as the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza enters its 159th day. UNRWA says the onslaught has claimed more lives of children than in 4 years of conflict around the world. The situation in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds is getting tense as Israeli forces escalate their deadly crackdown on Palestinians during the month of Ramadan. And also in our headlines, the Israeli military conducts a drone attack on a car in southern Lebanon, killing at least two civilians there. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story, the American-Israeli genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza is now in its 159th day with the regime pounding areas with warplanes and artillery across the besieged territory. The latest Israeli airstrike hit residential areas in Rafah, the southern city where nearly 1.5 million displaced people are enduring extremely dire conditions. Additionally, the regime's airstrikes targeted areas in the central city of Deir al-Balah, the Jabalia refugee camp, and the southern city of Khan Yunis were struck as well. The health ministry in Gaza says nearly 31,300 Palestinians have been killed since the war began in early October. Most of those killed are women and children. The UN says the number of Palestinian children killed during the first 4 months of the war on Gaza has topped those killed in 4 years of conflicts across the globe. Well, the UN says the number of Palestinian children killed during the first 4 months of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza has topped those killed in 4 years of conflicts across the globe. The head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, made the remark in a post on his X account. Philip Lazzarini said, "The UN figures show that around 12,200 children have been killed in conflicts worldwide between 2019 and 2022. That's while, according to the Gaza Health Ministry, more than 12,300 Palestinian children have been slaughtered since early October. The UNRWA chief has also said that what's going on in Gaza is a war on children, their childhood, and their future." EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell says Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war against Palestinians in Gaza. He made the remarks as he addressed the United Nations Security Council members on Tuesday.
"And when you look what's happening, you may doubt about it. I don't want to teach any one of you about what is happening in Gaza. 30,000 people dead, 1.8 million displaced, 500,000 people on the brink of starvation. We are facing now a population fighting for their own survival. Humanitarian assistance needs to get into the Gaza, and the European Union is working as much as we can in order to make it possible. But this is a humanitarian crisis which is not a natural disaster. It's not a flood. It's not a earthquake. It's a man-made. And when we look for alternative ways of providing support by sea or by air, we have to remind that we have to do it because the natural way of providing support through roads is being closed, artificially closed. And starvation is being used as a war arm."
On the first day of the holy month of Ramadan, thousands of Jordanians rallied in Amman and across the country to protest against Israel's genocidal war on Gaza.
"Today, on the first day of Ramadan, we are standing before the genocide, the enforced hunger and killing, the targeting of children, women, and unarmed civilians, and the demolition of houses over inhabitants. Of course, our message is to create a humanitarian land corridor to northern Gaza, where the Palestinian citizens suffer from hunger and dehydration inflicted by the Zionist enemy that is leading this offensive war, this genocide and ethnic cleansing against the Palestinian people."
Carrying Palestinian flags and banners, the protesters chanted pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel slogans. They also demanded unhindered delivery of aid to Gaza as they gathered near the Israeli embassy. Jordan that is hosting 2.4 million Palestinian refugees has witnessed several rallies in solidarity with Gazans since Israel launched its war on the besieged strip. Similar rallies have taken place in other countries as well.
As the crescent moon marks the beginning of the Muslims' holy month of Ramadan, millions across Pakistan have declared their intention to dedicate this month to the oppressed people of Gaza. Among those joining in this noble cause are Abdullah Khalid and his family. Recognizing the sufferings of the Palestinian brothers and sisters in Gaza, Abdullah and his wife Majabeen are choosing to donate their money this Ramadan to the innocent people of Gaza instead of indulging in lavish feasts and excessive spending.
We are dedicating this month of Ramadan to our brothers and sisters in Gaza who are facing so many atrocities. And when I imagine that my brothers and sisters are having their suhoor and iftar with all the bombings and all the sirens of ambulances, it gives me goosebumps.
We as a family can, alhamdulillah, afford enough. But this Ramadan, we have decided to make things very simple, very basic, as much as we can, so that we can, save more money and give more charity to the people of Gaza.
Charitable organizations and grassroots initiatives have launched campaigns to raise funds and collect essential supplies for Gaza's residents. Pakistanis are mobilizing on a large scale, organizing food drives, providing medical aid, and boycotting pro-Israeli products in order to support men, women, and children in Palestine.
Every McDonald's meals that you consume, the dollars are going to buy more ammunition to kill our children. People don't realize it. People don't realize that the Israeli army is getting Happy Meals every day for free. It's ridiculous.
Throughout the country, mosques and community centers are organizing special prayer sessions dedicated to the well-being and liberation of Gaza.
Through their decision to prioritize the cause of Gaza during Ramadan, Pakistanis are demonstrating the true essence of the Islamic principles of compassion, justice, and charity. This pledge indicates their commitment to turning religious teachings into practical acts of compassion and support for the oppressed and those in need. Nasika Azmi, Islamabad.
Well, several more Palestinians have lost their lives in the latest raids the Israeli forces launched on Tuesday evening on several parts of the occupied West Bank. Mona Candela, our correspondent in Ramallah, joined us earlier with more details. Let's take a listen.
Unfortunately, as you were saying, it seems that in less than 24 hours, the Israeli forces shot and killed six Palestinians all over the occupied West Bank. The latest Palestinian is yet another Palestinian minor, this time 14-year-old Mohammed Abu Hamid from the village of Al-Khadr, South Bethlehem. The Israeli military claimed that Mohammed Abu Hamid arrived on an electric bicycle at the tunnel's checkpoint at the entrance to Al-Quds and near Bethlehem. They claimed that he had a knife and that he succeeded to stab two Israeli soldiers. They were wounded and they are in light to moderate conditions. The Israeli forces then opened fire immediately at this 14-year-old Palestinian. They shot him and killed him and confiscated his body. Earlier, the Israeli forces stormed Jenin refugee camp and the city of Jenin, and exchange of fire have taken place between the Palestinian fighters and the Israeli forces. Two Palestinians were shot and killed. At least one of them was shot and killed by the Israeli forces while he was inside the complex of the Jenin government hospital, where clashes have been taking place outside the hospital, and the Israeli forces opened fire at the people there at the conflicts of the hospital, and one Palestinian was killed there. Earlier, two Palestinians were shot and killed at the village of Ajib, northwest Al-Quds. The Israelis claimed that a day earlier, Palestinians threw explosive devices or cocktail or Molotov cocktails at the Israeli military checkpoint there. Earlier, there's another Palestinian, this time in Shafwat refugee camp in Al-Quds, after the, let's say, the Al-Maghrib and iftar of the first day, the second day of Ramadan. He was at the outside his home playing with a number of his relatives. The Israeli forces opened a fire and shot him in the chest. Then they claimed that he was playing with fireworks with the other children, and that's why the Israeli forces opened fire at him, shot him, and killed him. The number of the Palestinians who were shot and killed by the Israeli soldiers since the 7th of October is today over 430 Palestinians.
An Israeli drone strike on a car near the southern Lebanese city of Tyre killed a member of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. The drone hit the vehicle near the Palestinian refugee camp of Rashidiya. The slain Hamas member has been identified as Hadi Mustafa. According to security sources, a civilian who was passing by on his motorcycle was also killed in the strike. Reports say the Israeli drone was hovered above the site for several minutes before targeting the car. Soon after the strike, sirens were also heard in the occupied territories, indicating possible retaliatory attacks by Lebanon's Hezbollah movement on Israeli targets. Tensions remain high between Hezbollah and Israel since the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza in early October. Both sides have been exchanging fire, but Israel has intensified attacks on civilians in Lebanon in recent weeks. Earlier, we spoke to our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, to get more on the latest tensions between Israel and Lebanon.
We do not have confirmation or the names of those who were killed in that vehicle, but it is pretty close to one of the Palestinian refugee camps in South Lebanon. It is possible that there is a Palestinian figure that was in the vehicle. It could also be a member of the resistance. We know now that after the strike against this car, sirens were sounding in several areas in the Western Galilee parts. And so that is probably we have those sirens because Hezbollah seems to have launched several rockets. We also know that rockets were fired toward the Golan Heights. That is something that Hezbollah has also maintained is part of its scope of operations as well. We also know that there's a lot of threats from the Israelis, a lot of talk that they want to go on with a blow against Lebanon, a full-scale war. You have elites within the Israeli regime that are warning of are saying Hezbollah is not going to surrender. It's not the time now for any sort of war against Hezbollah, against Lebanon, while the war in Gaza remains. And he said very clearly this, these elite figures and other political figures also in the Israeli regime are stressing that we all know that Hezbollah is not going to stop until the war on Gaza stops.
A senior Israeli official on the condition of anonymity has revealed that the United States is seeking to oust Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. In a statement issued to the media, the official pointed to a new U.S. intelligence report showing growing public distrust in Netanyahu. He interpreted the wordings in the report as an effort to unseat Netanyahu. The intelligence report for the for 2024, rather, published on Monday, warned the viability of the Netanyahu cabinet, saying that it may be in jeopardy amid criticism over its handling of the Gaza war. U.S. intelligence agencies in the report also speculated more rallies demanding Netanyahu's resignation and snap elections. The intelligence report and reaction show growing rift between Israel and the U.S. despite Washington's all-out support for the regime's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. Moving on, thousands of Iranian legal experts and attorneys have joined the global movement of lawyers who have volunteered to file a genocide complaint against Israel at the International Criminal Court, referred to as the Army of Lawyers for Palestine. The initiative has so far mobilized more than 200,000 lawyers worldwide. Gisumi Shahmati has the details.
An unprecedented global movement gaining momentum. Initiated by veteran French lawyer and academic Gilles Devers, the Army of Lawyers for Palestine now has over 200,000 lawyers of different nationalities on board and still counting as he travels from country to country to promote his grassroots campaign.
We are witnessing a new movement in the world. The atrocities committed in Gaza are no longer only a matter that concerns Muslim countries. Far from it. Here we have a French lawyer that has started an initiative that brought together 300 lawyers from across the world in less than 10 days, and that number grew rapidly to 100,000. And now with the MOU that we have signed at the Iran Judiciary Bar, that number will be rising to 50,000 lawyers. With Iran on board, you can also expect lawyers from Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon to join in as well.
And an optimistic Gilles Devers, who has already filed a complaint of genocide against Israel with the International Criminal Court, demanding an arrest warrant for top Israeli politicians, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
This is going to be a tough battle, without a doubt. But in just a few months, all these lawyers have joined us. This kind of solidarity is unprecedented. We have never seen so many lawyers join hands for one purpose in history. So this is a great sign, because it won't be enough to tell a judge, look, there's no many of us. Instead, we have to be able to defend Palestine with strong legal arguments. And by the looks of things, we have a solid base for that.
His South African fellow companion shedding light on the legal aspects of the matter while explaining how the case brought to the International Court of Justice by South Africa is also paving the way.
The ICJ order specifically spoke about creating a humanitarian corridor and a humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza. The United States and Israel were saying that the word ceasefire did not exist in the ICJ order. But this is not true, because the humanitarian aid on the ground at scale cannot be delivered without an effective and immediate ceasefire.
It is very clear that we are witnessing a birth of new age. A new movement of justice-seeking people from all over the world is emerging, and that is why, while the South African government files a complaint, we see a grassroots movement also taking shape. A very unique one that has brought together lawyers who are seeking justice in the battle between good and evil.
And in the words of these legal experts, this goal is not far from reach.
These lawyers believe that we live in a new era, in which this new global initiative will eventually lead to justice for Palestinians. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Yani. Bazaar. Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items.
Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iran's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show. This time, our journey took us to the city of Abhar in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaran Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes. This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results. The government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported. It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, all industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roaster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications.
Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of a legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages.
In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative high-tech productions for exports.
Research steered by scientific investigation plays a huge role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. And academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and the commercialization of products. Several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups.
High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. Iran possesses a lot of intellectual prowess as a whole. Evidence of this can be seen by the high number of academic publications both nationally and internationally. Nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Figures from the International Web of Science show Iran was globally ranked 16th in 2019 for its citation work. Numerous knowledge-based companies that provide valuable research and products are born out of university, tech park, and trade zone incubators. These establishments provide platforms that support the creation of new businesses in various fields of advanced tech development as they start up. Incubators offer services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully execute their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. Moreover, incubators are an access channel for services such as workspaces and facilities, technical and legal consultations. These are important for the sustainability of both existing firms as well as innovative startup businesses. The goal is to increase regional economic growth and diversify the national economy. Such development support also strengthens the tech ecosystem and improves investment opportunities. Fire clay is basically mud, but a lighter, stickier type of mud with high alumina content. It's actually everywhere around us, but cannot be seen until it is uncovered from the earth. In its raw form, Fire clay is found near or between layers of coal in coal mines. People have been extracting it from the ground for millennia to make bricks, ceramicware, tools homes, and a whole bunch of other things. Its qualities get even better when it's baked and stiffened. This clay has a great number of industrial uses and lasts nearly forever. Our quest for answers led us to a company that owns and manages at least 5 mines in Fars province. Esterlal Obade Company specializes in the extraction of fire clay and the production of clay products. Fire clay is a refractory material that can withstand extremely high temperatures without losing its original properties. There are other types of refractories that this company also produces in small amounts, such as high alumina and melite ceramics. But its main claim to fame is the production of highly useful fire clay. It might be interesting to know that this company is not just a mine owner. It also has 3 factories. These factories make products like fire brick, washroom items such as sinks, and industrial ceramics. Its production facilities can make large amounts of ceramic parts that are used in various fields such as blast furnaces for coke, iron, and steel productions. Because fire clay is heat resistant, this material presents excellent qualities for outdoor flooring purposes. One of the benefits is it doesn't crack or expand when exposed to hot climates. That is why it is widely used across the country, particularly in central and southern regions where temperatures can often exceed 45 degrees Celsius. The quality of fire clay is assessed by its levels of impurities. This company can produce some of the highest grade fire clays in the West Asian region with around 75% purity. In general, when the material is extracted, it is then transferred to the Research and Development Department where it is tested for quality. One of the competitive advantages of this company over similar firms in this field is the quality of its products that match international standards. This holding company has created dozens of direct job opportunities over the years, and hundreds more people are indirectly hired as well. Out of some 50 fire clay mines nationwide, this mine has been the only producer that extracts its products along the lines of exports. This company has faced many challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Some are related to the fluctuation of domestic raw material prices. As part of its future vision, it has also overhauled production processes to optimize outputs. Besides the mine we just talked about, there is one other major fire clay deposit which is located in Charmahal Bakhtiari province. This mine offers 12 million tons of proven reserves and it is set to produce some of the best quality refractories in the region. Each year, a combined average of 300,000 tons of fire clay are exported. Iran's tile and ceramic market have become very attractive with rapid socioeconomic development in the West Asian region. Also, there is an increasing need for new housing units in neighboring countries. There are some of the things that are driving Iran's export market in this field. So the country has stepped up its production to gain a larger share of the market. We looked at the latest figures from the Ministry of Industry to gain more insight into the productions in this field. Data showed that in the year 2020, roughly 400 million square meters of tile were produced in Iran. Such productions were estimated to be worth nearly $450 million. These productions were more than local needs, so nearly 160 million square meters of tiles were exported. Industry participants say that this sector is presently operating at only half of its total production capacity, adding that it has high export potential. With this in mind, the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade is working with the government to find ways to expand its markets through production. The goal is to increase production levels by 300 million square meters over the next 4 years. Analysts estimate that this will generate an additional $2 billion in foreign revenues if the strategic sector taps into the full capabilities. Fire clay does not only feed the tile productions. It also supplies raw material to manufacturers of sanitary ceramic ware, such as sinks. Iran currently makes copious amounts of these items. In fact, in the first half of last year alone, over 70,000 tons of sanitary ware were released into the market. Going off on information from the National Customs Administration, these items were mainly exported to neighboring countries.
The country's light and heavy construction sector is booming with construction materials in high demands. It is worth noting that domestic raw materials such as fire clay meet 100% of Iran's construction needs. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are some statistics on the construction materials market.
Iran's steel, cement, tile, and ceramic industries produced more than twice the country's internal needs. Last year, exports of these items raked in some $10 billion in foreign revenues. Tile, glass, and ceramic exports compose some $3 billion of total exports. Steel exports accounted for the rest. That's all based on statistics from the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. On another note, the country's mega mining and metal sector, which also supplies the construction sector, has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. Industry participants say this was mainly due to the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry, which led to more focus on other sectors. Much of this expansion is in large part made possible by linking research institutions with manufacturers. This step was critical for sharing knowledge in collaborative product development. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by. They help speed up chemical processes between molecules that might have been taken years to interact. Factories rely on catalysts to make everything from plastic to drugs. Catalysts also help process petroleum and coal into liquid fuels and are key players in clean energy technologies as well. However, their biggest use happens in the oil and gas industries.
All right, everyone, now I will pass it over to my colleague who has prepared an interesting feature program for you all. Let's take a look.
You definitely have a clear image of a concrete or a steel structure, but when it comes to tensile structures, you most likely cannot picture anything. They're self-standing structures, carrying only tension and no compression. Mostly made of membrane or industrial fabrics, they're most often used for roofs and canopies, creating unique private and public spaces. Mahout is the name of an Iranian company that makes all kinds of tensile structures. Tensile structures can cover vast areas. While they're lightweight compared to other types of construction, they're extremely strong. Tensile fabric structures are designed and engineered to withstand even the most severe weather conditions, providing protection from both rain and sun. Mahout says its products are made using the latest technology and high-quality materials, on par with their international peers. Mahout has under its belt a dedicated team of experts who are constantly exploring new trends and efficient designs for eye-catching yet resilient tensile structures. While the Iranian brand has a strong foothold in Iran's market and is eyeing higher horizons, Mahout says it's working to undertake international projects. Offering a unique landscape for outdoor eateries, restaurants, and coffee shops, tensile structures are beginning to attract more attention in the architecture industry. This means the future market will be lucrative for the actors in this field. And Mahout says it will stand out, as it believes quality is in the details.
There is so much more that can be said about knowledge-based products, so let's take a look at some news and trends in this field. You have probably heard the phrase NFT, or non-fungible tokens, being thrown around recently. The very first Iranian NFT issuance platform was established and launched in the country.
The platform is called Beta. It was created by a company in the field of developing digital technologies in the information communication technology sector. Beta digitally certifies artistic and non-artistic works in the form of non-fungible tokens. The developer says it plans to increase international access and grow the platform's ecosystem to determine accurate asset values. People can purchase NFT that are backed by authentic art approved by the system and sold at auction.
Most people don't think twice about fungi, but what if it could be used to help treat diseases? Well, an Iranian knowledge-based company has managed to come up with the technology to produce rare medicinal fungi.
This company focused on producing four species of medicinal fungi. Once cultivation conditions have been established, these plants can be mass-produced. Its medicinal properties will be used in the form of tablets and capsules. These fungi have the potential to treat liver disease, immune deficiencies, diabetes, and some skin diseases. Plus, the four species can now be cultivated in 3 months.
The number of cars and pollution increases as cities grow, and one way to manage this issue is to create specialized technology. Domestic knowledge-based companies and startups have developed 17 innovative products to improve road traffic and reduce air pollution.
The products were developed to address the rising number of vehicles and inner-city trips in cities nationwide. Some of these smart products are used to record traffic violations, collect traffic information, and license systems for restricted traffic zones, among many others. Smart traffic monitoring systems have also been developed by these companies.
We are fresh out of time for our program for today. Thank you for tuning in.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers, sisters, listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat. One of the keys of life that we have been talking about is being nice and being kind and being gentle and giving and showing financial support to our brothers and faith. Among the things that we have to do towards the brothers and sisters in faith is to give them a gift and accept their gifts. And mind you, giving gifts to people, it is universal. Every human being on earth does it. They either do it to their family members, they do it to their friends, to people in general. And we do that to make them happy, isn't it? One of the reasons that we give gifts to each other is just to make people happy. And when people give you a gift, it also makes you happy. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, he did not neglect that aspect of when it comes to the believing men and women. He says, "Tahaddu tahabbu." When you start giving gifts to each other, and he says, give gifts to each other, for you will love one another. So the act of gift, it brings you closer to that person that you give a gift to. And then he says, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, فَإِنَّهَا تُذْهِبُ بِالضَّغَاءٍ. When you give a gift to a person, sometimes you might have something against that person in your heart, a bit of hatred, a bit of jealousy, a bit of envy, a bit of this and a bit of that. And, you know, sometimes we're human beings, we have this. And then this person, he comes and gives you a gift. And then what seems to happen is like, oh, he's not what I thought, she's not what I thought, and then your mind changes about them. So this eliminates all the hatred that we have towards another, one another. Therefore, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam says, "Tahaddu tahabbu," give gifts to one another, you'll fall in love with one another. And it will push away all the, you know, the rust that you have in your heart concerning your brothers. He also said, in terms of giving gifts to one another, he says, "Al-hadiyatu turuthu al-mawadda." When you give a gift, what you get back as inheritance from giving a gift is that love of the other person will be yours, and it enforces and strengthens the brotherhood bond. وَتُذْهِبُ الضَّغِينَ, and eliminates hatred from the heart. وَتَحَادُّ تَحَابُّ, give each other gifts, for you will love one another. So one of the means that we can enforce our relationships and make love amongst each other and one another, and, you know, leave hate aside, is to give gifts to one another. You might be asking, well, does there have to be an occasion? Sometimes there are occasions where we give gifts to each other. Sometimes, no, you don't need an occasion to give gifts. Among these occasions, a person who was very well off himself came to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. He says, "Nabi ibn Rasulullah, I have a big land and I'm very well off in terms of financials. But then there are ceremonies, as he calls it, mahrajan, and, like, you know, festivals, and people have certain aids. They come to me and they give me gifts. Should I accept it from them?" The Imam said to him, "First, are they Muslims? Do they pray?" The Imam said to him, "Halaysahum min al-musallin?" "Are they among those who pray?" He said, "Yes." Then the Imam says, "Faqbal hadiyatum," then accept their gift. Since he's a Muslim, accept their gift. So when it comes to gifts, we should accept and also give. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat. So we have mentioned number of things that we can do for our brothers and sisters in terms of financial help, whether in form of food, in form of clothes, in form of having a roof over their heads, in form of getting them married, in form of a service of some sort. Also, one of the most important ways we can help a brother and a sister in faith, and this is something that we deal with mainly now, is when it comes to debt. When it comes to debt, a lot of our brothers and sisters are actually in debt. Sometimes even close family members who are in debt. And we know they are in debt. They're in debt to this and this because they had to buy this from them. They had to get this from them. And they have to get certain needs. And they put themselves in debt. And sometimes we don't care if they are in debt. Well, that's not my problem. You know, let him pay it. Why should I pay it for him? Islam says you need to relieve that person of this burden, because debt, according to Amir al-Mu'mineen, is one of the burdens of life. He says, لا همك هم الدين. There is no stress, there is no pressure, there is no worry as much as the worry of debt. And we all know this. So we need to help them relieve themselves from this burden that they have, which is to pay off their debts. I can give a loan to a person. I have extra surplus money in my account that I can help a Muslim who is in need of it. And I know he's in need of it. And I don't. And that person himself, obviously he has enough self-dignity not to go and ask for money. And he says, please lend me money. It is my duty to come to him and say to him, listen, I have extra money, you can have it, you know, do whatever you need to do. And inshallah, when Allah changes your circumstances and you can pay it back, you can also give it back to me. And this way, you're happy, I'm happy. That's a beautiful thing to do. And for that, we have a hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. He says, there is not a single Muslim gave a loan to another Muslim. But not just any loan, because sometimes we give loans and we make people write like 1,000 documents and we make them sign and we make witnesses. This is required in terms of doing contracts. But helping people, that's a different thing. He says he gives him a loan, yuridu bihi wajhullah, that I give someone else, a Muslim, a loan. And my intention is Allah and Allah only. Allah will say, okay, the money that was taken from you, it will be counted as sadaqah, as you paying sadaqah, until it is given back to you. So sometimes you give sadaqah, it goes, that's it, it finishes. You give it, people take it. But sometimes he says, you give a loan to a person, but it's your money, it will come back to you. But for that time being, while it is in the hands of another Muslim, it is considered as sadaqah, which means you are constantly on a daily basis getting profit and interest in return from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So then there's an emphasis when it comes to dealing with people and also giving them. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Whoa, 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 whoa. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.